Hello, and welcome to episode 451, the first anniversary episode of us doing 450. I'm your host, James Jones, and, well, I had an intro, but I forgot what it was, so we're not going to do that. With me today...
You didn't have to say it. You could just rolled into it.
But I had a pause there.
He's relying on you to cut it out, Key.
I don't care if he cuts it out or not. I mean, the professionalism on this show is already through the floor, so who cares? All right, but we do have, as you heard, Mr. Guillaume Veillette.
Hello.
Mr. Greg Leahy.
Oi, oi, everyone.
We do not have Mr. John Lindemann, who is out on business. Instead, we are joined, I believe for the first time, Mr. John Reardon.
Yeah, hi.
It's good to have you.
Thanks, it's good to be here.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So...
It's fortunate to find another John. Such short notice.
Less confusing that way.
Yeah.
I actually didn't want to make that comparison.
I see. Well, I don't know. I think it will help listeners just like... We'll just pretend that he's...
Yeah,
you know.
I mean, I could have just introed him as John Lindemann and we'd not said anything and people would have been real confused. They could have been, wait, John's got games and he sounds different? This is weird. But, new business. John, it's up to you to go first.
Yeah. Okay. So it's around Halloween, obviously, and I was looking for something spooky to play, and the options were Fatal Frame or Slender the Arrival, and for some reason I went with Slender the Arrival. Yeah, this is a game that came out in 2013 everywhere else, but it's a new to Wii U owners game. It's the extension of the original Slender the Eight Pages, which was a free PC game where you wandered around in a dark forest with a flashlight, gathering pages, all the while Slenderman, a tall, poorly modeled dude with no face, follows you around and tries to kill you. The more pages you get, the more aggressive he gets. Pretty much just one epic build-up to a jump scare when he finally grabs you. So very simple game. But it was fun, great sound design, good, solid, simple concept. So the Arrival...
So it's the letter, right?
It's
a knockoff of the letter?
Oh, yeah. No, a shameless ripoff of the letter.
Okay.
So, which I've also played. Don't... Oh, man.
Oh, God.
Best $2 ever. So essentially, the Arrival takes that concept and is stretching it out into a full game. So the first letter of Slender the Arrival is... pretty much the original Slender game. The problem is that in stretching it out, they've really lowered the difficulty. Like, that original game was a very difficult game. But now you kind of go in, it says you're looking for the eight pages, you're going through, and I've played a lot of the original Slender, so all of my old strategies came back of, you know, never doubling back so Slender can never catch up with me and all that stuff, and as I'm playing, I'm gathering pages, I'm doing great, he's not catching up with me, and I'm like, man, I'm a lot better at this than I thought I was. And even as I started to get, like, most of the pages, I would start seeing him a lot, like, catching up to me, but I noticed that I could get really close to him without him ever doing anything. And what I eventually found is that they had turned down the difficulty so much to make that first level, you know, not too bad and to stretch out kind of the difficulty curve over the entire game, that it was really boring.
Right, because the appeal of the first game is that basically you're constantly going to be losing.
Right, you are under constant threat of being caught and jump scared by Slenderman. And so because you see him so much, but he never does anything, it completely takes away any of the fear you have of him. It takes away that mystery. Of, you know, oh, I might come around this corner and he'll be there. It's like, of course I'll come around the corner and he'll be there, and that's fine. I'll just walk around him.
Apathetic Slender Man.
Yeah. And then, like, even when you get to the second level, he doesn't so much get more aggressive as they add these other enemies that are sort of like zombies or something. They run at you and tackle you and knock you over and you lose some health. But all that does is then make Slenderman even less of a threat, because those zombies are way more of an issue and are way scarier than Slenderman is. So essentially what they've done is turned Slenderman into just this complete non-threat throughout his entire game. And it's very, very boring and kind of disappointing, especially for $10 or whatever it is. I think it's like a 2-hour long game.
Ugh.
One of the things I thought was going to be cool is when they ported it to Wii, rather than just doing like a straight port of the 360 version, they actually added in Wii Remote and Nunchuck support. And I was like, oh, you know, some of the best Wii games as far as like integration of those controls I ever played were the ones that used like flashlights, like horror games, like Silent Hill Shattered Memories. And so I was like, that'll be cool. So
the calling.
I go to play with that. And at first, the menu works using the Wii Remote, and then it just stops working. and so I reboot it, and the second time, it doesn't work at all with the Wii Remote and Nunchuck, and I just can't play with that. So as much as I would like to have that experience, the game just won't let me. So yeah, overall, it's just
very
a
odd
quality experience.
Let's imagine that I don't play scary games because I'm too chicken shit.
Okay.
How do you play this game? Like, you run away from things. Is that the sole gameplay? And where is the challenge usually? Like, what makes a good escaping from scary monsters? You know, what differentiates between the good and the bad? Like,
so essentially, like, what made the original Slender the Eight Pages fun is you're searching this dark, pretty large and confusing environment for these eight pieces of paper.
Yeah.
And so what makes it fun is, I guess part of what makes it fun is you have to find it fun to be scared. Which may or may not be true depending on who you are.
Right.
What I found fun at least was, you know, you'll get up to like a house or something and you'll say, okay, there might be a page. Because that was the other thing about the original, is the pages were placed randomly on different objects. And so you never knew when you started which objects they were going to be on or in. And so you might approach a house and say, okay, there might be a page in there, but if I go in this door, there might not be another way out of that house, which means I'll have to double back, which means they'll have caught up with me. And so it's kind of this, the idea that, you know, I want to explore, but the more exploring I do, the more dangerous it is.
Okay, so basically the danger is that you're going to box yourself in, like you're going to run into a dead end, and then Slenderman is going to be there waiting for you and you have to get out.
Yeah, the strategy is in like how you move, how you choose to handle the environment, and even what order you take. Like you might, if you know there's a house, it's like, okay, I want to do that first, because the more pages I get, the more aggressive he gets. So I want to do the house first and then come back and do some of the easier places.
And having played the original, it's not like he's teleporting around,
no,
but it can feel like it, because
he straight up teleports in the arrival. I watched him do it. Like, he disappeared in front of me and appeared somewhere else. And I was like, you cheeky bastard.
So how it is when you get close to him, your screen starts to freak out. And
even if you can't see him, if he could be like behind you.
And the closer you get, the more it freaks out. And that's sort of your indicator that you need to run right now. But you don't necessarily know where you're running. You're just going to run.
Right, because
you may run right into him.
Right, because you can't see anything because it's dark.
Yeah. It's just this freak out moment. You go, oh, God! And then you run into him and you're dead.
Well, that was the funny thing about this is I was literally like feet away from him. I walked right up to him and he just kind of like stood there. And then I walked around him. Like, all of the difficulty is just taken out, and it's
It feels like it sort of nerfs it, too, because part of it was you never really got a good look at him.
Right, and then but if you do see him, you're like, oh, this looks like a character from an N64 game.
Yeah.
Like, I am not scared of him at all. And it's
a tall dude in a suit with no face.
Right, it really ruins it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a bummer.
It's too bad. I wish they would just put the original 8 pages on there. That's a way better game. I'd much rather pay $10 for that. And that's a free game.
Wow.
It is very spooky, the original game.
Yeah, it's simple, but it works really well.
I mean, that's why it inspired so many knockoffs. And
yeah.
There are a lot of games now that have built on that concept. So I'm surprised to see them put the sequel out so late, especially now. Like, it doesn't really make much sense on the platform. I guess it was just an easy port.
When I suspect that a lot of like the weird control issues, like errors as far as actually getting my controller to work, I'm guessing this game was probably a little bit rushed to get it out in time for Halloween.
I think it also
came out on Xbox One and PS4 at the same time. I'm sure the Wii U version was not the priority version.
And it's a Unity project too, right?
Yes.
So yeah, it had been fairly easy to put it on all those systems. So yeah, they probably did just go, eh, we could probably get a quick buck this Halloween.
Yeah, when graphically it looks. I was looking at some gameplay from the PS3 version, and I think it looks identical on the Wii U. It looks a lot better on Xbox One and PS4, but it's just the PS3 or 360 version with controls that don't work. So yay.
That's a bummer. That's a real bummer. Like, because that game should be good.
It absolutely. Well, I think it's kind of an interesting experiment in how like a game design concept that's really good in a concentrated experience doesn't necessarily work in a full game, like when you stretch it out. So I mean, I learned something, I guess, about game design.
That's good.
I don't know if it was worth $10, but I learned.
Don't worry, there's more learnings coming up in this episode.
Good.
Guillaume.
Yes. So I went to my annual Nintendo of Canada Media Blitz. They basically bring old E3 demos and some newer demos, I assume, to Montreal. And they invite the media and their family. So there are kids over there. There are and friends and stuff. And but it's still a closed event. And so, yeah, you get to play some old demos. Unfortunately, you know, like before we went there, I told Karen, like, I think we're going to be playing demos for games that we already own, for the most part. And I was right. You know, Super Mario Maker was there, and Yoshi's Woolly World and stuff like that. I guess the three games that haven't been released yet that I could play were Yo-Kai Watch, which I ignored. Sorry, James. And
do you, man.
There was Mario Tennis. And there was Xenoblade Chronicles X. So we didn't stay there for long. we participated in a Mario Tennis tournament. Very few people registered. So like it was a very streamlined competition.
So tell me the hype for that game is off the charts.
Well, no, not really. The demo I played must have been the E3 demo. We couldn't select our characters. It was basically Mario and Bowser versus Peach and Toad. So you could play singles or doubles, and that was it. That was the demo. So during the tournament, we got our ass handed to us, but despite the fact that I had trained on the GBA version, but it plays exactly like the GBA version. It is exactly Mario Tennis in HD, but perhaps made a little bit easier. Because I don't know if I haven't played the N64 game in a while or if it's always been this way, but the characters in this game can jump. They really can. So you can basically almost place yourself anywhere on the tennis court, and like as long as you're in line with a ball, like it doesn't matter if it's bouncing maybe like 5 times your character's height, usually they'll reach and they'll hit it if you're, you know, in its path.
Yeah, so, that isn't that the titular Ultra Smash?
No. Because I thought that it was just the Ultra thing was just the Ultra Mushroom, or I don't know.
I don't know, but I think that is new, that idea of them. Just being able, that wasn't in the 3DS game, just being able to jump ridiculously high and hit it from there. Right. I assume that may be one of the things that you can turn off in the simple mode, which gets rid of the mushrooms and all that, but yeah.
Well, I hope so, because it kind of removes most challenge from the game, although, you know, your opponents can do it as well, so, but I mean...
You think it just removes the lob from the game altogether? I mean, we talked about lobbing the post quite a lot when we did the retroactive, it was like, well, now that shot is just irrelevant. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, kind of. So, I don't know. It was weird. And but other than that, like, there's not that many observations to be made. I guess I did get a better grasp on controlling giant characters than I did the first time I played this demo. In the summer, the ball, I was more able to actually hit it and not just let the ball hit my character. It does have a cute, I don't know, it does have, like, the cute factor is pretty high, because when you grab a Mega Mushroom, the animations as you become giant are nice the first time that you see them. You're going to see them a lot if you buy the game, so it's not really that much of a bonus. But seeing them once, it's pretty cool. So look them up on YouTube. Like, I just liked the way that Toad just basically became King Kong as he was growing up. Like, he's kind of, like, flexing and just... anyway, it's weird. But the camera does a good job of, like, staying ground level and, like, oh, so all of a sudden, Toad is towering over you. So it's a... I don't know. It's either a nightmare or... a dream that I don't want to hear from. Anyway, whatever.
It's the end. It's basically what would happen if I was in the end of Ghostbusters instead of Dan Aykroyd.
So it didn't make much of an impression, and the impressions from reviewers are rolling in, and they're not very good. So I was going to say before that, like, yeah, sure, it's Mario Tennis in HD, so if that's what you're looking for, get it. But it sounds like it's not as good as that.
Mario Tennis Ultra Smash, November 20th, 2015. Mm. Get yours now.
Instead of Star Fox. Dang it.
Guillaume, I mean, you're doing a lot to sell it, so I want to let people to know when they should expect this hot jams.
So the other game that I played, basically the beginning. It must have been the full game. The beginning of Xenoblade Chronicles X. Unfortunately, the venue was pretty noisy, and I couldn't hear the voice acting, so I don't know which future Doctor Who companion was voicing who. I don't even know if they were British actors, but... it looks nice. Like, it looks like Xenoblade in HD, and that's basically all I can say about it. I don't think it's gonna win over anyone who wasn't already kind of in love with Xenoblade Chronicles on the Wii. Because it's very much kind of not an up-res, like it's not doing the game justice. But you can see that it's more of that. It's higher fidelity, sure, but the kind of the focus is still on the same things, like the up close textures of rocks might not, you know, blow your pants off, but if you look in the distance, you'll see these gigantic dinosaur like creatures, you'll see these gigantic mountains, and you know, okay, I'm going to be able to explore there pretty soon. So that's where that's what's interesting and kind of thrilling about this type of game. Other than that, they've really improved the character models and the animations from the first game. We're not talking about Uncharted levels of acting here, but they've certainly put a lot of effort in that, and also in the jumping and running animations, which are much smoother, and your characters can kind of haul ass in Xenoblade Chronicles X compared to the original. So that's pretty good. Like, in a game that's focused on exploring large environments, you want to be able to run a little bit faster than you did in the original.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I'm guessing no robots, though, huh?
No, there were no robots.
It's deep into the game, isn't it, as we've heard?
It's super deep into the game.
Basically, the combat that I did, like, I don't know, it was very similar to Xenoblade Chronicles, except that you could press X to switch to from your gun, your machine gun, to a close-range weapon. But other than that, it was the same interface for battles. It was very, very similar. So if you've been craving more Xenoblade, it looks like that's mostly what you're going to be getting. Yeah, other than that, like, I mean, this event is kind of weird just because, or maybe I'm weird because I don't mingle. I don't, you know, like, I say hi to the Nintendo of Canada organizers. Like, there are other media people from Quebec, from Montreal, who attend, but I don't really talk to them, so I don't know them, so I didn't ask them, like, so what do you think of this event, you know? But it was weird because it was as packed as usual. Like, they usually choose cramped venues a little bit, like, it's never quite large, but like, there were a lot more people than I was expecting. I kind of assumed that most of them would not have time to you know, be trying out games that they've already reviewed. So it was kind of weird, but it certainly Mario Tennis did not have the kind of the attraction power that Smash Brothers had last year. The tournament for that was, you know, got people excited. This time, I think there were like 8 people who participated.
Oh, yep. That's a shame. I mean, because as we talked about on the show a couple weeks ago now, Mario Tennis for the GBA. It's a really good game.
It is. So I recommend people to check that out. It's
also on the Wii U.
Yeah.
And cheaper.
Absolutely. Yep.
Cool. I guess I'll go next. Because I forgot the order I was going to put it in, so that's fine. And it'll be quick.
Again, you didn't have to say that.
It's fine. Like I said,
it's all about transparency.
Yeah, when has professionalism been an issue? Well, my concern was I'll go next. I thought I was going to go next. And I go, well, damn it. Fine, you go next.
Okay.
So, I was going to play Fatal Frame, Maiden of the Black Water or Dark Water. I can't remember now.
Wouldn't it be like copyright infringement if it was Dark Water?
I don't know.
Considering the Japanese horror film that he's actually called, and it's American.
That's true, you're right. No,
American
you're right.
Adaptation with Jennifer Connelly.
You're right. So I have never needed to use a Wii U hard drive. It's never come up before.
Oh, wow.
Well, because I buy retail games.
Yeah, right? But still, it's so small. You could fill it up with just download stuff pretty quickly.
I mean, most of the download games are really small, though.
If you downloaded Virtual Console games, most of it, that's fine. But still, it's 32 gigs these days. You get like 25 of that in reality because of the OS?
Most of what's used, actually, is like Smash Brothers patches. Like, yeah, that's the biggest things on there.
That's true.
I've got like 2 gigs of Smash patches at this point. So, well, goddammit, Nintendo. So, I got a hard drive, and because this game is not retail, at least not in North America. In Europe, they had a very limited edition.
Yeah, they had a limited edition, which was, you know, plenty of money in there. But, like, yeah, even though you're not downloading the full game, when you download the prologue and the first couple of chapters,
it's still
or whatever,
6+ gigs.
Over here, it was asking for 10. 10
you know
gigs
what?
On the European eShop. I don't know where the heads up actually taking that much, but
it was either 6 or 9, so it may have ended up being 9. So it's a big honking game. So I got a hard drive, was on their compatibility list, threw it on the Wii U, no dice. So it was working, like it was doing stuff, it was whirring, it was lighting up. Spooky. Why does the Wii U not see the hard drive? I thought maybe it was the Y cable, because maybe it's just not getting power, but the hard drive's getting plenty of power. It's doing reads and not doing anything. Mm-hmm. So I did some more research and found that no, it still needs the Y cable. The Wii U's USB ports put out so little power that a hard drive designed to go with you and potentially hook up to your phone can't actually run.
Right.
Which is remarkable.
So they do advise that you get one that plugs into the mains, basically.
Yeah,
they advise that pretty strongly. So that's what I ended up getting to mitigate.
What a freaking! It's like, why? It's just.
But weren't you warned? I mean, like, didn't we talk about this over and over again?
I think the problem is it was probably too long ago that we did
it. Yeah, it was a really long time ago.
Because,
I mean,
most people ran into this wall, like, 2 years ago.
I'm very aggressive with my space clearing, too. So.
Oh, the fridge cleaning. He gets the rubber gloves on.
Yeah. So I had to find a solution. And the answer is nobody on Earth sells Y cables in the retail environment. Ever. No one has possibly ever sold these. And they may actually haven't been invented by Amazon. So. I've got one of those coming. But it's coming tomorrow. So. I couldn't talk about Fatal Frame today. So instead, I went and got Human Resource Machine. Because that also comes off as very spooky. Human Resource Machine came out today. It's from the creators of... Why am I blanking on what they created?
2D Boy.
Yeah. Is it 2D Boy?
Isn't it?
Well, they used to be
called
the
Tomorrow
that.
Corporation. Sorry.
Tomorrow Corporation.
That's what
they're
called now. So But they did World of Goo, right?
Yes. They did...
Oh, so like Little Inferno.
Yeah, Little Inferno, World of Goo. So this is their second Wii U game. So this game is essentially kind of like... I don't want to call it an edutainment game, but there's definitely a little bit in there. Basically, you are essentially a human computer at this point. Your job is to essentially do very simple tasks repetitively for your nameless corporation that treats you appropriately. Basically, what you're doing is you're programming routines with very basic programming commands to complete a task. So, for example, your first task is... There's an inbox and an outbox, and your job is to move all the items in the inbox to the outbox. And your boss, who tells you he's been working here for 25 years, can't remember your name. In fact, you don't even get to enter your name. You're just employee, and then the number slot you are. And you get a nice employee badge. Says, you know, it just gives you meaningless manager speak the whole time, talking about how anything worth doing right is worth doing. I can't remember the rest of the sentence or something along those lines. So basically, in that case, you just go, you just drag over commands into your command list. So you go in inbox, outbox, inbox, outbox. Do that. You do that 6 times, and then you hit play, and your character walks to the inbox, picks up this square that's just got a number in it, carries it over the outbox, drops it, and repeats that until it's done moving everything, and then you get to clear the stage. As the game goes, you start getting more commands. So you'll get things that are essentially go-tos, where you would have a line that says, so for a good example, the first time it comes up, it's the exact same scenario as the first one, but the game wants you to do it in 3 steps. So you would do inbox, outbox, and then you'd have a go-to that as the third line that takes you back to the beginning, and it would just loop until it ran out of stuff to do. The challenge of the game is not just completing the task that they give you. And each year of your career, you get a new task, which is really depressing that you go from mailroom to busy mailroom after a year of working there. but there's additional challenge in doing it with the least number of commands and doing it in the least number of steps, because you're using loops, and eventually you get conditional statements like if 0 go to here, if negative go to here. You know, the number of conditional statements, it may not be the same as the number of steps you have to do, and you may end up with weird scenarios where you have 3 conditional statements but thousands of steps because of how it loops. Not thousands, but a lot. So as somebody who's been programming for 2/3 of my life, I've been kind of breezing through the game because it's a lot of really introductory programming concepts like logic flow, that kind of stuff. There are occasionally second branching paths that give you harder stuff. So I just completed one that had doing an XOR, or essentially if both of your values are negative or positive, so either the same, they're the same sign. So pick up 2 items. If they're the same sign, put a 1 in the box. If they're opposite signs, put a 0 in the box. So you had to kind of compare 2 things and keep state. So there's certainly some complexity being built in. And then in that case, I actually wasn't able to hit the challenge of the minimum number of steps and minimum number of commands. So I need to go back and redo that one. But
so what chance do the rest of us mortals have?
I think it does a pretty good job doing a ramp up. Like, say, there is certainly some edutainment to it because it starts really simple, and then it builds at a nice pace. So I mean,
will I understand like XML after this, or
no? You won't. I don't. I mean, you've been doing the FTP or the goddamn. You've been doing the feed on the for the podcast. So you basically understand XML as it is.
I see.
But there is certainly some of the side challenges. I was thinking this would be difficult if you have no programming experience, but the primary flow is pretty straightforward, and the whole time your boss is just giving you just meaning, like this dystopian version of meaningless manager speak. So working in a corporate environment, basically he's giving you the real version of manager speak. So truly, this is the spookiest game on the Wii U eShop this week.
Yeah. And knowing Tomorrow Corporation, there must have been a lot of winks and a lot of. I'm assuming that like the end of the game, you're like, okay, you've made yourself obsolete and irrelevant. And
so every few years, it's break time.
I see.
Every few years, it's break time. So you're basically in an elevator, and that's the level structure. You're going up floors because you're getting promoted. Nobody knows my name on like year 20. It's sad, but every few years you'll hit what they call coffee break, and it's just these 3, you know, Tomorrow Corp style women standing in front of the coffee pot drinking, and then you hear this horrible siren, and they're back to work, and they scuttle off in their weird animation, and then the news turns on, and it's something like mysterious power outages are still paralyzing the city. Authorities are investigating. And as I've gone, they've become increasingly dark and troublesome. Right now, the city's surrounded by robots, but they're not moving, so it's probably okay. Authorities are investigating.
I see.
Like, what's happening right now? it's a weird, silly game that A does a pretty good job teaching, you know, basic logic concepts, and then B does a pretty good job nailing corporate culture to the wall. So it is truly the spookiest of things.
Wow. I'm excited. I want to play it. Those guys have not really put out a bad game so far. Or at least not an uninteresting game. Like, yeah, I guess
definitely interesting.
Your mileage may vary on the Little Inferno because there's not much to it, but what is there is interesting and
weirdly hypnotic.
Yeah, and it's not something that, as far as I know, anyone has attempted before, right?
No. So and it's a little bit dark too. That's kind of a running theme of their later two games. Is there's a little edge on them, mm-hmm. and I mean, Little Inferno's is very dark. This game is all like sepia tones and just weird stuff going on. It's an interesting game. Greg.
Yep. It's been all Triforce Heroes really for me. So if you remember, I talked about this a little bit, I think a couple of weeks ago now, that I mentioned, oh yeah, you know, kind of waiting for reviews to see, you know, what to do about it. And, what happened was not long after I said that, there was a sort of attractive pre-order deal. I went, screw it. I'll get it. You know, I'll get it for this good price now while that is still available. Take my chances, you know. And then, of course, the reviews start coming in. And a lot of it, you know, pretty mixed, you know. There's quite a range of opinion on the game, but mm-hmm. some of the themes around it are, you know, if you try single player, that's not a good idea. You know, if you're thinking it's going to be like Four Swords Adventures, it isn't, because you don't have like the formations and stuff to manipulate all the links simultaneously the way you did in that game. And subsequently in interviews and stuff, you know, they've basically owned up to the fact that it didn't really have single player for a lot of its development, and they kind of just cobbled something together relatively late in the process, which is, you know, sort of apparent. And then also you talk about the online section was what surprised me. I mean, all the kind of no voice chat, using the you know, little icons to communicate stuff, like we all knew about that. I knew people were going to complain about that. That's, you know, but the talk about the lag was what really surprised me. Like how bad it seemed to be, you know, like, and even I think with the US Gamer review talk about like really bad lag playing locally.
That's weird.
And I was just like, oh my God, what have I gotten myself into? Like, because basically, you know, I'm not going to be able to play locally, not going to be able to play with friends online, because most of my online friends are in the States. So, you know.
Is it just because the lag? That's the only thing I could think of.
Yeah, I think you really have to look at that, because, you know, if the lag is that bad at times anyway, cross-region play maybe just couldn't be done, which is weird when you think how well stuff like Smash Brothers seems to function. I remember playing Johnny at Smash Brothers, you know, he's all the way over there on the western side of the country in America, and it was really good. You know, and that's Smash Brothers. Like, I'm a little bit baffled, but they probably put more effort into that in that game.
Finding ways to cheat the lag, I guess.
But yeah, but anyway, I mean, I was really concerned about how this was going to turn out on that basis. You know, what use was I really going to get out of the game? You know, I turned up and I started playing, basically the only way I could, which was online with random people. And I was shocked at how well it went. I mean, the cases of lag were pretty sparse. And in fact, you do get, like, before you sort of set off for the actual quest, you have to stand on the Triforce, the three of you, to actually initiate sort of the actual game. You can move around that little area. And so the lag is immediately kind of apparent. So you could just kind of go, yeah, this isn't happening. I'm quitting before we even begin. If you just like, if someone just takes one step and it starts like slowing, it's like, no. So, but that hasn't even happened that often. And most of the time we've gone into the games and it's been fine. So I don't know whether that's just a commentary on the fact that, you know, my area is more densely populated and the random matches, you know, the random people are getting matched up with are closer in proximity, and that's like the primary factor in all this. I don't know, but I mean, there's plenty of densely populated areas in the States if you're living in a city or something, so it's really weird that there seems to be such widespread issues with the game.
That is odd.
People talking about that. So, but you know, obviously you've still got, even though, like I said, lag wise, I haven't had much of an issue with it. You've still got the thing of, okay, you're playing with random people. You don't know what they're going to behave like. You don't know what their experience level with the series is. And you can't communicate all that well with them. Well, all in all, it's been pretty good. I mean, there's been some times where you get something, you know, pretty infuriating happens. You know, like a classic one is, you know, with this whole equipment system and the costumes you can make, you know, you can craft costumes which basically kind of give you a powered up version of an item, much the same way that you could in Link Between Worlds. You know, you'd get the Uber version when you'd collected enough Mimes or whatever. So in this case, if you've crafted the proper costume, you know, you'll have the Uber version of an item. So of course, if someone wears that costume, they should really get that item when, you know, there's only three there. There might only be one of a particular item. So he's wearing the torrent robe that makes the water rod thing really good. Leave him to it, right? Well, sometimes someone else gets it. And the person is trying to sort of, is pressing the item button, the item emoticon or whatever, trying to convey that they should change which item. And then they just start using it randomly, like they clearly don't know, and it's just, oh, this is so doomed. This is literally the first part of the level, and we're crippled.
Never underestimate assholes on the internet.
I don't think it was assholery. I think they just didn't understand. Yeah, they probably had not seen that costume before. They didn't know what it was, what it did, and didn't appreciate the fact that they were kind of screwing the team out of an advantage of him having the powered up version of that item. So it's just that that kind of stuff. Luckily, I think mostly by virtue of luck, probably. Has not happened to me that often, but it did there, and the potential for it is pretty significant. But it's stuff like that that, in a weird way, makes it all the more delightful when you actually do stuff. You know, like when you actually kind of like, go, I'm going to press this emoticon to convey what I think we should do. God knows what they're going to take from it. And when they actually, you know, when it's, oh God, I got my point across, the joy. The joy of actually coming together and achieving stuff is kind of heightened. I don't know whether it's a worthy trade-off overall. Although, to be honest, I would advocate for voice chat with friends. I wouldn't be interested in doing it with random people, the voice chat bit. So this kind of suits me better. And if it's drawing players from across Europe, there's lingual issues as well. So it kind of makes sense for the random people to just communicate this much. And even though the puzzles, you know, by virtue of the fact that I think the one thing is because it's designed specifically for three people and they haven't made any concessions in terms of our scaling it down for two people or whatever, as they have in other multiplayer Zeldas. The one thing is that the puzzles are more of an emphasis, the greater specificity, and tend to be more satisfying than some previous Four Swords type of games. There really is some quite clever stuff in here, but I guess probably nothing that taxing that, you know, because I think the communication issues really would kind of make it very difficult and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, the game is, you know, intuitive enough that I think a lot, it isn't too difficult to just proceed. I mean, the progression structure is a little interesting because all you have to do to sort of open up more areas is complete the fourth part of any given world, with the fourth and final part of any given area, which has the boss of that area in it. You don't really have to do the other ones. That's kind of optional. And I guess the thing is, you know, the way the game's set up with this whole gear grind, loot stuff, you know, it's like, well, people are going to want to play levels over again because they'll get more materials and craft new outfits and give them new powers and all that. But I don't know. That part of the game doesn't really appeal to me all that much. So it can be a bit frustrating because, say, for instance, if you've played the fourth level before, you know, you go in there with random people, you have no way to coordinate which level you should play. You know, and maybe they're choosing the fourth one because they want to beat that world and then move on to other worlds. But you've already done that. You know, you wanted to go back and look at, you know, 1, 2, or 3. And so that could be, you know, pretty annoying sometimes where you're going to end up playing levels you didn't want to play. So I suppose it's a little bit like, it's a little bit like the Chibi Robo thing, except there's more of a legitimate reason for it because it's to do with online. But still, you know, it doesn't let you actually specifically say, all right, match me up with people that want to play level 1-3. It's just like,
God, why?
It's just like, world one.
Why can't it just do that?
I don't. I guess it's, you know, just trying to cast a broader net. They fear that it would be too narrow otherwise. And also probably it's trying to, you know, I don't know, it's trying to sort of inculcate you into this idea of, no, it's fine playing it again because you'll get more materials and
I guess
get more rupees and that's the game.
Yeah, like, but when that happens, though, when you've played the level before and the others haven't, then you just end up solving it for them, no?
Yeah, like, that's just the
like,
other
oh,
thing.
I know where to go. And
I mean, I think because I played through it pretty quickly, like after the game, I got the game like a day before it officially came out and all that kind of stuff. You know, it didn't really seem like there was many levels I was playing the first time through where people already knew it. But if you were getting it later, that's a very good chance that there's just going to be someone that's just going to kind of... Now, of course... the limited communication means that they can't, you know, spell it out. It's still,
where's that guy going?
It's still a bit of an adventure there, but, you know, yeah, I think that is going to be more of an issue for people that are picking up the game later, is that they're going to be in there with someone who's got like really good gear or something. And, you know, although the one thing about replaying the levels afterwards as well is that once you've beaten a world, you get the chance to do these sort of additional challenges, which are separate. Right. So you're kind of like hard modes, but of different sorts. It might be do it with damage and health turned, you know, against you by a factor of a half, you know, for instance, or you might be, you've got to stay within the confines of this orb. So you've got this additional issue of like, well, somebody's got to carry the orb to let everyone stay within it. Otherwise you go too far away from it, you start getting hurt and all this kind of, and that's the thing. I mean, once you start introducing these harder stuff, there's a compound problem, I think, for me. In that, first of all, I think a lot of it is that the suits that you get from the materials in the main game, not really that necessary for just doing the basic stuff. And in fact, you probably won't even be able to craft them until you've played through the levels once, you know? It's like you get the materials to make for it, like the Goron outfit that makes you immune to lava, from playing the volcano levels. So, you know, you're going to have the Goron outfit until you've probably completed that world. But where it comes into play is doing some of the hard stuff the additional challenges in that volcano world. You know, so like, I guess, you know, in that sense, it gives you a reason to craft those outfits and get the loot to do it. But the problem is, if you play online with random people, upping the difficulty only sort of exacerbates that feeling of like, God, we could really use with better communication and coordination here. You know, you're really starting to butt your head up against the limits of what you could do with random people. And obviously, you know, if you've got twice as much damage, you know, the odd sort of blunder from someone falling off the edge of something, all that is so much more costly. I can only imagine, you know, people are going to get a lot less patient and just kind of leave the game, which completely kills it for everyone immediately as soon as they do. Just says, comes up, oh, something's come up, I've got to go, and that's it. Doesn't matter how deep you're into it, there's no capacity for something to fill in or anything like that. It just kills it for everyone. So I cannot see me getting anything much out of that sort of phase of the game, the more expert kind of phase. That really is more for people, you know, either online with friends, speaking over Skype as well, or in the same room, probably the most ideal scenario. In the same
right.
room playing with
But you need absolutely three people. Like,
yeah, you gotta have the three
to
people.
To me, like, I really feel, you know, like I pre-ordered the game because I wanted to get a rebate on it. I pre-ordered two copies. I assumed that you could play the game with two people and control, like, the puppet like you can in the
in the one player game. Yeah.
But it won't let you, yeah. So we'll have to play, you know, online with a stranger, and then all these issues come up, and it's just not the ideal way, right? So I'm seriously thinking, thing of trying to return the copies and, you know, get another GBA, a couple of cables, and get four swords because...
God.
No, I mean, God. I think I did play a little bit of one player just kind of to test it out and also to go back to some of those levels I was talking about that I'd kind of skipped over because, you know, I'd been outvoted and ended up doing the fourth level early or something on a particular world. And, you know, it is very... It's clunky straight away because you got to switch between the different dolls. And, it's not... I guess the fact that you can tote them up, the signature move of this game, means that, you know, it's not as cumbersome just to move around. But it really does vary depending on the level design. There's some... where it works surprisingly well, even though it's still a bit cumbersome just to get things that can be just a bit, you know, tricky. There's things that that would be simple with two people that just are not like challenging or, you know, complex to solve. It's just finicky and time consuming and irksome. But then, you know, other times there's something really satisfying about, you know, finding a way to pull something off. But that also, though, you get these parts where it really hardly works at all. I mean, and in fact, you can tell they've conceded that it hardly works at all by putting in a skip function. You can actually skip every level. You know, every world is composed of four levels, and every level is composed of four sections. And you can skip a section at the cost of a life, essentially. You could do it in single player. You could just say, all right, I can't make this work. Take me to the next bit. Because sometimes, even though technically you probably can do it, it would just be annoying to do. I mean, for instance, something I was confronted with is where you've got these sort of balancing platforms. So the idea is that, you know, like two links, one would go on the left side, one would go on the right side, and then move around accordingly to maintain the balance while a third does something. Well, imagine trying to do that when you can't control them simultaneously.
I just like, this is mind-boggling that this is coming from Nintendo, because you would think someone over there would say, you know what, maybe we should be fixing this thing so that it actually works.
No, I mean, the single player was transparently an afterthought, you know, they've admitted as much, essentially. So certainly if you were in any position of having to lean on that, like I said, I mean, I played Four Swords Adventures on the GameCube recently, alone from start to finish. It was very enjoyable. I cannot imagine that the same could be said of this at all. So that is a very real difference that people should be cognizant of. The only thing you can do with two people, I believe, is the Colosseum mode, where it's just a little fun battle thing. You have a few different stages, some items and stuff. And the only thing I'll say about that is, for me, considering I'm not that interested in doing the advanced challenges because I just don't think it'd be very fun with random people, that is the one place where I can take the outfits I've crafted and actually do something with them. You know, I sort of lucked into a relatively rare material and crafted the ninja outfit, which gives you a sort of better dash attack that deals triple damage. And that's pretty fun to mess. You know, it doesn't really have that much use in the regular game, but you take it in the Colosseum and just charging around like a nut job, carving people up. It's actually kind of fun.
I'm bummed out. This is the first Zelda game in a really long time that I have no desire to purchase.
It's a spin-off, and you could tell it was probably pretty hastily kind of convened to do something with the infrastructure they had from Link Between Worlds and do something different with it. And, you know, it's got some really satisfying moments in it. You know, because I didn't play Four Swords multiplayer, you know, this is the first time I've been able to tap into some of that enjoyment. And it can be really, really fun. And the bosses are pretty good. You know, they have a nice sort of combination of actually, you know, figuring out what to do, but also, you know, the action component. You know, I mean, when you're clinging on with that one heart and it's beeping away and the tension and you're counting on somebody else to deliver the final shot, it's great. You know, it's really fun. It's there in places, but, you know, if for people to get that kind of enjoyment consistently, you probably are going to have some kind of coordinated setup with two other friends, be it, you know, online in the same region or in the same room.
Mm-hmm. Well, Greg, thanks for reporting from the dark abyss that is playing with three Links as one person. And from trying to communicate, no, over here, damn it, with the pom-poms. We're going to go ahead and take a break, and we'll be back afterwards with listener mail. It's Now Playing, a sampling of the best new original content at NintendoWorldReport.com. Flying solo this week, which means less witty banter and more video. Yo-Kai Watch demonstration. Ally Rap from Treehouse provided us a demo of how Yo-Kai Watch works. Watch us watch her play. We also have a video, Best of Star Fox and Salt, parts 1 through 5 by John. Not the John normally here, the John that's guesting for us this week. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. In all seriousness, check out the highlights of John's run through of one of the quote forgotten Star Fox titles. By forgotten, I mean I forget its name. Frequently. Be sure to check out the weekly Nintendo News Report. This week, News Lord Donald Terrio and my fitness Sherpa Alex Calafi are joined by site meister Neil Ronahan to discuss Nintendo's investor briefing, Nintendo account, and Miitomo. Of course, you can skip all that this week, because we're going to start talking about that right here as soon as I stop talking about the site. Arfin forever. We also have another video, Kim, Becky, and Halloween Treats and Tricks. Kim and Becky share some, quote, Easter eggs about your favorite Nintendo titles. You know, as you do for Halloween. Let's just call this video a foil to the news report and leave it there. Also, this website has written stuff. We have impressions. Mario Tennis Ultra Smash by Don Koopman. Oh, Donna. I'm sorry. I didn't think Nintendo would do this to you. And I'm used to it for, like, vertical train suspension simulators, but I'm so sorry. We also have an editorial, A Journey Through the Heart of Modern Zelda by Andy Gergen. Andy took it on himself to replay Twilight Princess. I wonder where he got that idea from! And has a lot of thoughts about the game, how it builds its world, and touches on future comparisons with the perfect 10 out of 10, no flaws, Skyward Sword. Lastly this week, we have another editorial, Can Nintendo Save Their Holiday Lineup by Justin Brood. With a spate of delays and already light lineup, Justin has some ideas on how Nintendo can make their holiday less a lump of coal and more sack of gifts. And he's not even here this week. You can get more of this, not this, more professional content, right now at Nintendo World Report. And we're back. We're not actually going to go right into listener mail because over the last 2 days, Nintendo has done both their quarterly wrap-up for their financial statements and they've had their sort of state of the company address, the first under President Kimishima. And it is where they unveiled both their new account system. Although there's still a little bit of details we don't quite have. And they unveiled their first mobile offering and shifted the schedule for the release of their first mobile application. So we're going to run through those. Those are kind of the big points. And they talked a bit about some sales information. That's kind of interesting. But we'll probably talk more about that when it's topical because there isn't really much to sit here and talk, dissect their sales slides. This isn't an E3 presentation. Boom. So first, let's talk about the account stuff. So who here has a real solid grasp on all the components of it? I've got a decent, but I don't want to miss details. So if there's somebody who can cover me while I discuss it, so I don't miss anything.
I think the headlines that we're looking for is the fact that, you know, you are talking about something that's going to be integrated across devices. And also that you can log into it by a number of different ways. You know, they talked about the fact that they, you know, there's a lot of feedback around people forget their, you know, logins, their passwords, whatever. So you can log into it either, you know, it might be through your Nintendo Network ID, but it could also be through your Facebook account or any number of the other pre-existing social networky kind of stuff that, you know, you presumably do remember because you use it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a big deal that, you know, you're making it something that's going to be, you know, accessible to you through, you know, all your Nintendo devices, obviously, but also through your phone, and then but also be accessible just through, you know, your accounts that you're using all the time. So hopefully, you know, that will mean that it's not something that people just forget about.
Right. And to go with it, they also talked a bit about their new rewards program.
Yeah, the loyalty aspect of it, yeah.
Which is known as My Nintendo. Well, first off, the account system appears to be called Nintendo Account.
Yeah, which brilliant is, name.
Which is possibly the worst name they've done in a while, which is saying a lot.
That's
a bold.
The bar is pretty high.
I mean, it actually isn't a name. It is just it is the description of the product. But
it's very accurate.
It is very accurate.
Right.
It's bad. It's a bad name. It's a really terrible name. Oh, one other thing that they announced alongside that was the presence of cloud saves between devices, which is why the inter-device integration is so important.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's you know, it's something we was kind of hoping for, but I don't know whether it's necessarily something that everyone was expecting from Nintendo. You know, some people might have thought it was a bit too progressive for them, but I think it shows that this is something that is important to them. You know, they established that people are going to have this sort of connection to their Nintendo kind of life, as it were, sort of interaction with the other people who play Nintendo, sort of online community all the time. I think it shows that they're serious about it, and also it might suggest why the timeline's been moved back to the end of the fiscal year, because I think probably just technically they're grappling with some of these issues.
Yeah, it's a big integration project.
Yeah, because I mean, when you think about it, but if the loyalty program doesn't start till the end of the fiscal year, then basically we will have been without a way to earn rewards for Nintendo purchases for pretty much a year.
Yeah, and depending on what region you're in, more, you know, it's been a long time since North America's been able to do anything with the loyalty program.
But yeah, I mean, but even then, it was kind of for us, you know, it was like, okay, you could still redeem rewards you'd already accrued, but they stopped putting out games that actually had, you know, a code or, you know, something you could earn stars off, as they're called here, after April, I think it was. You know, I got Kirby in May and that didn't have one.
Yeah. So the other thing that Greg alluded to here was the My Nintendo, which is their rewards program. The idea is that you would earn points for purchasing stuff, but you could also earn sort of Uplay style points for just for playing games.
Yeah, it's interesting how much is that going to be like an achievement type of thing? Is it for specific things that you do, or is it purely like just plowing hours in, or like, you know, I mean, they always like to encourage you. It's like in Triforce Heroes, there's that whole friend token thing. Like there's one outfit you can only craft by collecting friend tokens, which you can only get by playing with friends in person. So they like to sort of direct you in certain ways sometimes with games, and I wonder whether this will be another lever for them to use for stuff like that.
Yeah, and they talked about the ways you'll be able to sort of, or how you'll be able to sort of trade in rewards, and that they went through a bunch of different things. You know, you'll be able to do trade them for downloads and for DLC. They also mentioned stuff like use in amusement parks and movie theaters, which presumably, Which, I mean,
so probably
yeah,
Universal
sure.
Studios then.
Will yeah, we I be mean, able to redeem a month of Netflix when the Zelda series comes out on that?
Yeah, way of the future.
I do, and also for merchandise.
I assume they'll still have some stuff that's kind of like what we got from Club Nintendo before, at least in Japan. I mean, they were obviously in America, they were really going off the physical stuff.
Right.
Before, mm-hmm. I mean, I missed
in
the
Europe,
physical
still,
rewards.
In Europe, you still had a lot of like cool new physical stuff, pretty much right to the end, like a Captain Toad lamp and all this kind of stuff. You know, a Majora's Mask thing.
Yeah, screw
thing
you
and,
guys. You know,
but and of course in Japan, it's a similar story. But Yeah, the US, they really went off that. So we might see that continue. I think we might have quite a divergence in what kind of merch we're able to get across the regions.
Yeah. So, you know, not a whole lot of detail beyond that for the My Nintendo stuff. But, you know, it's interesting to see that they've got accounts that are now integrated across Nintendo devices and non-Nintendo devices. They have cloud saves, and they mentioned that cloud saves should be available on dedicated gaming systems as well as smart devices for the smart device apps that they're producing.
Yeah.
Their point program, you know, does everything from digital rewards to coupons to physical rewards, and they mentioned things like theme parks and movie theaters, where of course Nintendo properties show up in movie theaters occasionally, and of course they signed that big theme park deal.
Yeah.
So it does seem like there is this overall brand integration thing that they've been talking about for a while.
I think it's just a big part of trying to make Nintendo more omnipresent in people's lives. You know, the way that the people's lives are changing with, you know, they're integrated, every aspect of it is into their smart device and all that. Nintendo needs to be visible in that arena, otherwise it will lose its currency. You know, I think that's what they fear at this point, and that's why you will see their characters showing up as in smart device games, even if they might be quite different from the ones that we, in terms of design, that we play on the dedicated devices.
And that's really what they've been saying was going to be their plan all along.
This is a thing like totally out of the blue. This seems to be the execution of the plan they've articulated before. We just see more specifics of it.
Yeah. So, I guess before we jump on to the mobile game announced itself, anybody want to give some thoughts about how they're feeling about the accounts that they've. I know it's vague. It's a vague question, but
I guess the big thing is just jumping off from what we were talking about NX last week. You know, the idea having the cloud save that reinforces the idea of you have the same game. You know, that you might play at home, then you play it on the portable device and all that, and those sort of transferring kind of required. You know, it's all integrated in there, and it just makes it easy. And also, perhaps if you're someone, like me, who's got multiple 3DSs, in the future, if you had multiple portables and there's like one that you prefer to take further afield and there's one that you prefer to use at home and all that kind of thing, that maybe all that sort of thing could be integrated. And
that's one thing though, like if the saves are shared but the games are not, I find that the utility is a little bit.
Questions to be answered in that department.
It appears that this is coming to Wii U and 3DS, where there already are games that appear on both platforms.
The Mario versus DK Tippin' Stars, for instance.
Smash Brothers and.
But I mean, with Mario versus DK, they even gave you a code for the other version, right?
Well, there's a lot of non-Nintendo independent games that do this as well.
That's true. Right. We've had that as well. You know, where they sort of. On an ad hoc basis have done cross-buy. So, I mean, even with the infrastructure.
I mean, they're not waiting for NX to get these cloud saves out there. This is, I mean, because in the graphic they use for it, they show.
Oh, yeah, they show. But of course, that's, I mean, if you're doing an infographic for, at this stage, for dedicated game hardware, you're going to,
but they do call out the Wii U and 3DS as devices in that new experience, as well as the NX.
No, and that's good. I'm glad that's happening. I don't know how much of the fruits of that we'll see on the existing platforms, and probably see most of it on NX, however long that takes to get here, but I'm glad they're at least thinking about that.
Yeah, I do. My reaction as I was watching the live blogs, it's been a long time since we've had to deal with live blogs, of this thing, was when somebody had taken a picture of the slide where they called out the new account system name, Nintendo account. It was in Japanese, but I could piece together a little bit of it and just losing my mind as I read it. Just sitting there.
Also,
wondering.
They had Nintendo account in English on there. It was English. Just Nintendo account.
Yeah. And just new account name. Mm-hmm. And the English slides are up right now, and it's even more remarkable in that way. So, they do call out like these lifestyle space services with theme parks and movie theaters and retail outlets. They'll provide that will have benefits for your membership account as well. So it does seem like they really want this to be everywhere, everything. To Greg's point, just omnipresent Nintendo in your life. It's a pretty big shift from, you know, just being a game company, though. Like, that's a tall ask from a pivot.
I'm just curious. Wondering if how much the general population will buy into it, because, like, we're people who generally already go out of our way to go grab everything
with the Nintendo's name.
Yeah, exactly. So we're already, like, we're going to benefit from, like, these, I don't know, these rewards, whatever they are, where, like, just from buying stuff we would have bought regularly. But you got to wonder if there's going to be enough word of mouth, if there's going to be enough incentive for regular folks to actually be like, you know what, I'm actually going to subscribe or
maybe it just makes it fit. Maybe they feel like it could start, be a better propagation method in terms of, you know, if people share a lot of stuff with their friends based almost on their smartphone. And right now, you know, there's, apart from, you know, just like web browsing stuff, you know, what are you going to pull up Nintendo related on your phone? You know, that it, you know, will turn, you know, Nintendo enthusiasts into better sort of evangelists and, you know, propagators of those IPs and products, you know, that that people will just become more aware of it because, you know, their friends are going to be able to kind of broadcast their Nintendo love more effectively than they did before. I don't know.
Their love of the Big Ape is what you're telling us. their business objectives for the smart device, which they actually talked about during the presentation, there's three. And profit's the second one. The first bullet point is maximize the population that has access to Nintendo IP.
Yeah.
The second one is the profit from the smart device. And the third is the, quote, synergetic effect on dedicated game system business. So, I mean, it does seem like, and I think during the Q&A session it came up as well, it does seem like Nintendo really views this as a promotion for their brand. And they want to make money on it, obviously, but their objective isn't to essentially ghettoize their games. It's just a thing we do. We're going to make money however we got to make it. It seems like this is really a brand enhancement thing.
And yeah, it's about being relevant. I think as much as anything, the whole breadth of the population's lives rather than just this little segment of people and younger kids and whatnot.
So, you want to talk about Miitomo? Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm sure, like, when people who don't have, like, a Wii U or a 3DS or an NX or whatever pick up these games and they're setting up their Nintendo account, then they'll be able to see...
I hadn't thought about that. Oh.
Account to the power of two.
But yeah, as they're setting that up, I'm sure there'll be links to, you know, link your 3DS, link your Wii U, and it will expose people who aren't necessarily even the type of people who play dedicated systems. It'll expose them to that concept.
The existence of them.
To the existence. Well, I mean, with the Wii U, yeah, you do need to expose people to the existence.
Yeah,
of that.
I mean, there's only 10 million
problem.
Of them out there even
yeah.
now.
Oh. Hey, it outsold the Dreamcast. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank God.
So I think it officially qualifies as a Pyrrhic victory.
At the same time, you probably don't want to piss off people by constantly reminding them, like, oh, hey, you should link your 3DS, like,
no,
people who don't have it. Like, otherwise, you're just, like, when you go grocery shopping and they ask you for your freaking rewards card. Like, I don't have one. I don't want one. All right?
But you don't have to necessarily, like, bug people to do it. Just the presence of that icon in the corner, you know? Of like, oh, I can link my 3DS.
It's worth something. I mean, I don't know that it's going to be revolutionary or anything, but that it's worth something. Like,
sure, but it's
that
exposure, you know.
Yeah,
I think the trick is probably to make the experience on the device of its own value enjoyable and you know, a meaningful experience, but to at the same time broadcast that while we're not giving you a sub par experience on this device to upsell you. But there's a way you can enhance your experience by buying this other thing. You have to keep in mind that the mobile market has a high tolerance for abuse. You can probably be a little bit more, you know, willing to go like, hey, why don't you watch this video about how you can use your experience with this thing to have this other larger experience. I mean, they've talked about leveraging their resources to sort of draw attention to other parts of the company before, and obviously that hasn't been as effective as they would seem to. They talked about with the Blue Ocean stuff, you know. We're going to convert these people playing Brain Age into playing, you know, I think that they used Rhythm Heaven as sort of the proxy. I mean, they very much advertised it like a Blue Ocean game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That, you know, didn't really work.
No. Because that game's actually very hard in a lot of ways. So it's kind of a weird sell. And it's a weird game. It's a difficult sell.
Yeah.
But I'll be curious to see if this sort of second pass at it is successful. But at the same time, they now have a decade of experience of dealing with this Blue Ocean stuff. So maybe they're better positioned to figure it out this time. Again, no reference to quality of life stuff, which I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah, I mean, I really felt like they would continue to follow through with that, but I don't, maybe it's just a case of, you know, putting the DNA stuff first, you know, that being the priority, because right. It's obviously, you know, it's clear they've fallen behind schedule with that as it is. You know, not just Zelda games, people.
Yeah, so
Nintendo has problems with timelines. Right.
So yeah, they did announce their first mobile. I'm not gonna call it a game, Miitomo, which is an app that you create a Mii and your Mii asks you questions and you answer them like, "What are you interested in?" and stuff like that. And then it sort of tells your friends your answers to these questions. I don't know.
Right.
I think this is the problem. I mean, forgive my ignorance of some of these things because I don't play mobile games and I don't follow them. But to my understanding, you know, talking about a mobile game several months before it actually comes out is not ordinary at all.
No, it's not.
I mean, normally it just falls out of the sky and people, you know, might see something, they're interested in it, especially, you know, a lot are going to be free to try, free to start, whatever. Mm-hmm. You just start playing
Which
it.
Which
this
one is.
Yeah, you either get it or you don't. You know, you either like it or you don't. This idea that everybody's kind of says, so what's this about? I mean, this is the problem. When you show a glimpse of a mobile app like this and people are saying, where's the beef or whatever? It's just a completely foreign concept to that segment of the market, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah, and like this is a lesson that mobile developers have learned a few years ago now, because like some companies like EA used to do the whole marketing before releasing a game thing and realized like, oh wait, when we talk about games, people look them up on their phones and they don't find them and then they forget about them.
Right.
So really, like, you should be marketing your mobile game when it's coming out, when it has come, well, when you're releasing it.
And of course,
it.
this was primarily just to, you know, communicate with the investors to say, yes, all right, we're not delivering this on the timeline we originally said, but it's happening. Right. But it had the perverse effect of actually driving down the stock price.
Yeah, promptly panicked because that's what
because
investors do.
It wasn't sexy enough or whatever. But, you know, the point is, this was not a marketing event, so I guess we shouldn't necessarily criticize it for not, you know, doing a good job of marketing the game. But at the same time, that information is still going to get out there, you know, and it hasn't helped the stock price. So I still wonder of the merit of showing specifics of the first.
I think they probably had to, ultimately, what it comes down to. It's one of the situations where they had to talk about NX almost a year ago at this point. They probably didn't want to talk about NX.
They're under some sort of external pressure to do
it. To do it. And, you know, I view this one. So they did talk a little bit about their economics model. This one's free to play. They won't all be. So maybe this is just, this is obviously, you know, testing a waters app. You know, it doesn't feature a Nintendo quote character, which, fuck analysts. That's all I'm going to say. But, as Mr. Kimishima pointed out there in the presentation, quote, "More than 200 million Mii characters have been created on our platforms, which means many people around the world will understand the appeal of Miis." Like, I look at this as being essentially what I imagine the full product of this is, rather, is something closer to, Guillaume, you played this game on the 3DS. What was it?
Tomodachi Life.
Yeah.
And worth mentioning that Tomodachi Life, I think, has sold better than any of the Zelda games on 3DS.
Yes.
So if you want to talk about, you know, the size of their properties, it's a big deal.
If that's what I struggle to think, it's just a thing that's going to communicate, you know, what my favorite food is to all my friends. It's pizza, by the way, in case anybody's wondering.
Okay.
But I have to imagine there's more substance to it than that, and it's just that's kind of like it's kind of like their Animal Crossing is a communications game description for this thing. Like it's not the full bullet list of what this game ultimately ends up being or thing and ends up being. So I don't know. Investors panic because that's what investors do. Like that's their default reaction to the unknown is to panic.
Well, I think there's certain irony in the fact that maybe they wouldn't have taken. I mean, a lot of the hit is associated with the fact that it's just the delayed, you know.
Right.
But although you notice they did still target the end of this fiscal year because they'll need to, and I think they're still on course for like 5 before the end of the following fiscal year. So, you know, they're trying to stick as close as they could to
right.
the original plan, but it would have been a sort of, obviously we have no idea, you know, if this actually would have happened, but had they had some, you know, thing that included Link or Zelda or something, and the hit to the stock price would have been less, even though individual Zelda games have not sold as well.
No.
There's something like Tomodachi Life that just shows you some of the sort of perverse perception issues that you get.
And even though I told everybody don't listen to commentary, I totally bought in and just went, "You stupid morons!" And then just ran on a rant for a while about just exactly that. So, yes, everyone listening to the show gets it. So, good job by you. I don't want to split numbers, but they had they've had a good half a year. It's their first profitable first half of the year in 5 years, which is good. Amiibo sales are still stupid.
I've got a bone to pick with America, right? Europe's got 2 Yoshi Amiibo in the top 10. Japan's got Yarn Yoshi in the top 10. America obviously hasn't
got the regular one. I did my service to the
Yoshi. We literally just got those things after the
quarter
ended.
But you haven't even got the we've got the original Yoshi figure, the fifth spot. You know, not enough Yoshi love. That's why you get it late, because you don't love him enough.
Oh, no, the reason we got it late is because Nintendo of America looked at their release schedule this year for Christmas and went, oh no.
They looked at their release schedule. We really need to torpedo Chibi Robo. He gets too much perks as it is.
No, they looked at it and said, hey guys, what's coming out on Wii U this year? Starfall. Okay, let's hold this one for a while. Should we tell Nintendo of Europe? Nah, don't let them know. Let them find out themselves. So, I mean, actually, what amuses me more than anything is number one cumulative sales ranking amiibo in Japan. So, goddamn Animal Crossing cards.
I'm not surprised. That franchise is so huge in Japan. They haven't even got the figures yet. Those are just the cards. I mean, I think that those figures that go with the party game are probably going to blow up big time
Just as a fun anecdote, this is the third time a Nintendo executive has apologized for the inability to keep the amiibo cards for Animal Crossing in stock in Japan.
The irony of Nintendo not being able to make enough cards. I mean, it's just layered on top of each other.
Issuing public apology. Like, he actually mentions explicitly another shipment went out today. It's like, are you kidding me? what is going on, right? Like, he took time from his investors briefing to let Amiibo card fans know, hey,
it's okay. We haven't lost the secret sauce formula that lets you make more Amiibo.
I promise you, a factory's truck left today. What the hell?
They broke the Amiibo card mold.
Yeah, it's gone into the same void as the Wavebird molds.
We ran out of ink. I'm sorry. The other thing that I wanted to talk about real quick is just the rise in digital sales that they're seeing is really, really impressive.
It's because they've actually started to really pound add-on content. I mean, that's the biggest difference. I mean, obviously,
that is actually the big difference is the add-on content.
Yeah, we've had full games being downloadable for quite a while, and a number of people have embraced that wholeheartedly. Obviously, James is not one of them, as we found out. But this add-on content though is another thing. And I mean, you've been talking about Mario Kart 8, really excellent add-on content, and also significant, substantial. Smash Brothers is kind of a bit more scattershot in terms of like some of its frivolous stuff like costumes and stuff, but it's still there in big quantities on a popular game. A lot of people are going to say, yeah, screw it, I'll get a couple pieces, and then you add that up over the continuum of all the people that own those games, and it's a lot of revenue.
Well, and to be fair, they actually front-loaded sales of the Mario Kart ones to get them in last fiscal year, which was just impressive. Just impressive. But I don't have anything else that I really wanted to call up in the presentation. I think overall it was kind of a stay the course from what we've had. We got a little bit more substance around stuff. But I mean, it's really just sort of them continuing to talk about the vision.
Well, there was, I think, the most interesting. That's the wrong word. Just the most surprising things that I heard in terms of these are the big issues we're expecting them to deal with that investors are going to care about. What I didn't expect was for them to say stuff like, "Oh yeah, well we've still got some more games coming out this year that we haven't announced yet." I assume they're going to be digital, products, like an NES Remix kind of thing that comes out of the blue, way that did. Obviously we've had all the Twilight Princess HD rumors, but I kind of feel like that may well be coming. But if you look at Majora's Mask, that was announced and released fairly shortly after, but I think February might be, the kind of slot for that, probably not, in this calendar year.
The question is, I assume he meant this fiscal year or this calendar year?
No, I'm pretty sure he meant this calendar year when he was referring to that.
I was like, it's like November.
I didn't expect him to say that. And of course, they did also say, which is something that's not really so much for the investor audience, that it's like, yes, Nintendo Directs are still a thing.
Yep.
There's going to be one this calendar year, and then they will return in 2016.
They're reworking the format.
Somewhat different form. So I thought those were kind of more interesting for us consumers rather than the investor crowd to chew on.
Actually, I did want to talk about that a little bit. We got an email. Let's see, that's a transition from Alex, who basically asked, Could you guys talk about the lack of Nintendo Directs despite the influx of news and leaks? Disrespect intended, but it seems like they should have had a plan B in the worst case scenario. They knew Iwata was sick. I'm just looking for your opinions. That's sort of been answered now, but I was kind of surprised. We got a lot of questions about the Nintendo Direct
there was a lot of anxiety about them coming back. And people really, really wanted them to come back. And I mean, I've enjoyed Nintendo Directs too, but it's interesting. Like, people really want this stuff.
That's
Triforce Heroes.
It is. Sorry.
Nice.
I was just loading up their YouTube. No, seriously, I was loading up their YouTube because I remember seeing a tweet saying that basically before, like in 2014, the Nintendo Direct views were, I don't know, like pretty low, like maybe like hundreds of thousands. And in 2015, they went millions.
Not great.
Right. But, so like just exponential growth of Nintendo Direct popularity. So obviously people found them and people latched onto them or like watched them more, or maybe they just, Nintendo Directs got better at advertising themselves, or
they got better at promoting them elsewhere, right, to get people to get those eyeballs on them. No, I mean, but it definitely seems like it's a real, it's become a fixture and people really, really want more. So, the fact that they got sort of taken, if they were in any doubt, and they probably weren't based on those numbers that you referenced, but the fact that they've been sort of taken away for a little bit could only have reassured them that, the people really like this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I was actually just kind of surprised by the anxiety. I mean, because the news was still coming out there. So I guess that speaks well for them. I mean, to Guillaume's point, though, they have gotten better at promoting them, and they are a hell of a lot better at producing them. That yep. weird one with mini Bill Trinan aside.
That's the best
that was
one.
Not better. That was horrifying.
Well, just like Giant Toad, it's someone's fantasy, or you can't judge.
I kind of want to end the show on the thought of Mini Bill Trinan being someone's fetish. Thank you, Guillaume.
No, Mini Bill Trinan being stomped on by Giant Toad. You've got to complete the circle.
Someone with Photoshop skills, please.
Don't worry, Nintendo will probably do it at some point because these things have gotten weird. But
But I guess, I mean, the question still remains about why, you know, that given that it was something they were having success with, why did they allow this to kind of happen where they would have this, where we've had a more of a pre-Nintendo Direct style, just little things getting released in dribs and drabs, you know, the tweet here or there, old school press release, info dumps, you know, all that kind of stuff. You know, I think it's interesting because before Iwata's passing, there was in Japan, like that sort of little sort of passing of the torch thing that they did, yes. Wasn't there? Where one of the people that was for Japanese directs sort of being introduced of like, oh, obviously at this point we didn't know how bad it was going to get and that Iwata would ultimately pass away, but it seemed like they were, you know, preparing for him to maybe at least just take a step back from that particular part of it. So it's interesting that, they didn't, you know, have some of these sort of things in place to keep it going if he was doing such a nice job for them. But I'm guessing it's just one of these things where, you know, they may have been able to proceed more if they really wanted to, but it's just it's perhaps one of these things where it gave them a kind of an impetus to take stock of what works about it and what doesn't. You know, what should the roles of different sort of executives be, you know, now that Iwata's gone and things. So it's just a sort of, I think, you know, I don't think they found themselves in a position where they absolutely couldn't produce Nintendo right. Direct. So they just sort of chose not to under the circumstances. Partially, I think, out of respect and, you know, a proper sort of grieving period and all that kind of stuff, but also just genuinely to use it, terrible as it is, as an opportunity to kind of look at it again and to maybe see about what's going to be the best way to capitalize on it going forward.
Well, and I wonder how this concept of this integrated, omnipresent company, the Nintendo Direct, fits, because it is directly preaching to the choir. I mean, that's what it is.
And the choir loves it, but, you know, and that's good, you know, to some, like I said, I mean, the only thing I'd say is maybe when you have this integrated account world, the sort of enthusiasm, the zeal with which people consume this stuff, as we're sort of seeing, boils over more into other people's worlds, maybe.
Right.
If the Nintendo fandom is more plugged into social networking and all that. I mean, obviously it does, you know, it's already happens, you know, you already get, so, oh, it's trending on Twitter or whatever, you know, it's not as if it's in a, you know, the phantom zone as it is, but there's still more that could be done, I think, to sort of take that enthusiasm and make it apparent to other people who might only be sort of tangentially aware.
Right, because the average person they're probably going to be targeting with Miitomo is not going to sit down and watch a live stream of a taped recording of them talking about a me thing for their cell phones. So it's how do you translate, how do you build a marketing strategy targeting that different community? It's completely different from what they've had to deal with in historically, essentially.
Yes, no, I think so. It's going to be a fair bit of trial and error here in how they sort of handle, like, how much of the sort of different aspects of the business do you kind of plug into with directs going forward. Yeah. Obviously, we've already had, like, you know, they've discussed Amiibo on them plenty.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Naturally, but some of this stuff that goes a bit farther afield, we'll see.
Yeah. So, anybody have anything else they want to talk about during the... as part of this segment, or
well, again, I'm just wondering when Nintendo Week is going to make a return.
Fingers crossed. The burning question there.
I can't fathom a reality I want to live in where Nintendo Week comes back. I mean, maybe they can make them worse. Maybe that's the plan. Just make them worse than they were before.
Darker, Gary.
Yeah, well, you know, like we need a we need closure on this. Like, what happens to his roof tent and stuff like that? Like, I'm still, you know, like I can write all the fan fiction I want, but really, like, I want the official line on what's going on here.
It's not canon.
I'm pretty sure Gary is already from the darkest timeline, so that's fine. Guillaume, I want you to write fan fiction for the site about Gary right now. I want you to stop recording the show and we'll wrap up with
don't even bother editing it. There won't be an episode this week. And then people will only realize when that 50-page opus goes up on the site.
I'll have to go back and rewatch what's still preserved on YouTube and elsewhere.
This is a problem about the non-permanence of digital media, isn't it? It's just so sad.
I'm pleased a little bit from how this went, that they really did sort of reinforce throughout all this everything that came out in the last couple of days, sort of reinforced how they view mobile as a component of the whole. And they're not hopefully this will calm down some people who still seem incredibly apprehensive about Nintendo doing anything with mobile. Now, 10 years from now, I don't want to think about it. But in the immediate time, I mean, because we still get people on Twitter or on email going like, is there any chance that's it? And I mean, they did just restructure their entire company to focus on NX or significant portions of their company. So, I mean, they're investing some serious cash. Just be calm. They're not going to go around and start making Pachi slots. It's not who they are.
Is that another segue?
Okay. So, speaking of which, Drew writes, can you guys explain how developing pachinko machines for Japan would be more profitable than developing video games for a worldwide market? And obviously, he is talking about the now recently deceased, Konami,
who has... Dead Konami.
That's right. Who has gone and really dialed back their investment in console and dedicated handheld video game development, obviously. They really only had two games they were promoting this year in that space. One of them obviously was Metal Gear Solid 5, which they've now gone and added just literally real money paid for insurance to the game. So you can protect your private money, your virtual money, by giving us real money. Because Konami's fucking assholes.
Oh my god.
And then winning
Pro,
11.
Pro Evo's the Pro Evo, that's the other one.
So the question is, what are they now? And the answer is, well, they have a bunch of other divisions. They have a division they refer to as their gaming division, which I had all the slides queued up and then I closed them last night by accident. Damn it! All right, they split their company into essentially four divisions. One of them covers video games dedicated and handheld. One of them covers like the health club stuff. One of them covers the manufacturing of gaming devices. And by that, they mean Pachi slots. And one of them covers the operation thereof. So essentially, the company that produces the most profit, or the part that produced the most profit for them last year, was their actual dedicated video gaming division. The reason Konami has shifted their resources elsewhere. Yeah, because Pachi Slot actually lost money for them last year. The reason they switched their resources elsewhere is they view the all-in costs of producing video games to be excessive.
I think it's a question of risk, isn't it, as well? You know, it's just that, you could spend however much money. And we've seen this before with games that have sold significant amounts of millions of copies and have received positive reviews, have been commercially the consequences for their company have been quite disastrous,
right?
Even though we're talking about a game that superficially seems successful because there's so much money that has to get sunk into it to make it a reality. And again, I think of it, something like Pro Evo, that's bankable,
right?
And losses last year notwithstanding, I can imagine, the gaming, sort of gambling type of side, of things is fairly bankable.
Right. And so I guess it's very probably predictable.
It's just a matter of probably conservatism more than anything. It's like it's not so much that you can't make more money out of video games, than you can out of place, because you certainly can, but there's a risk there. You might end up losing a lot of money, and that's obviously a risk they're just not comfortable taking these days.
Right, and they actually lost some. Actually, looking at their numbers now, which I was trying to pull up a minute ago, so I apologize for the delay. They actually lost money on their health and fitness division as well last year. They actually did make money on Pachi Slots. They basically broke even, but they view that as a long term investment that it's got high capital investment costs early. You have to build these health clubs. but then it just rolls over into a maintenance cost. Whereas producing video games is a constant churn of money. A game like Metal Gear Solid 5 is exceedingly expensive to produce. It is a very expensive thing, and then you have to promote it as well. And then it's in peak sales for what? 2 months? And then it drops. You start finding it in the bargain bin. That game will be on sale during Black Friday.
Mm-hmm.
At fairly significant markdowns. And once the markdowns start on a game like that, you know, it'll go back up after Black Friday, but it'll start to trickle down. And by January of next year, you'll probably start seeing that game new at $50 or less. Which, if you're Konami, is hard, especially in the retail environment where they're only getting a sliver of that sale. Even in the digital space, they're probably getting more of it, but the platform holder is still taking a significant cut. It's not like when Nintendo sells a game digitally and basically, everything for me, yay! And I think that's the other reason why a company like Konami is more willing to get out of that space. They ultimately have to give a cut to a lot of players. A lot of people get the hand in the till when Konami sells a game. Whereas Nintendo, who's obviously decided to follow some of the same stuff as Konami, they're involving in physical ass things you can do, an amusement park in this case, movies, stuff like that, as well as the mobile environment, but they're staying committed because they make much more money on the sale.
Well, it's kind of
Konami
interesting because Nintendo's diversifying.
They are.
At the moment. I mean, whether, you know, long term the fear for people like us is that they'll, you know, latterly having diversified, then scale back stuff like the dedicated games.
Right.
Because it doesn't do as well for them. But at the minute they're diversified, whereas Konami are kind of retrenching.
Right.
So they had
diversified already, and then
exactly. So I mean, I guess maybe you could argue maybe that's the timeline. But of course, Nintendo being a platform holder, like you said, it's more attractive for them. To do this stuff, because they get the whole pie. But yeah, just I mean, to me, it just seems like Konami basically said, too rich for our blood, you know. It just doesn't justify it anymore, apart from, you know, something as bankable as Pro Evo.
Yeah, and they, for them, this they also had faced pressure from their investments or their investors, and ultimately their chief executive, who is not the most amenable to the production of these expensive video games. I mean, he'd been quite open about it, actually. So this is a situation where a company in a very specific scenario made a decision, and they said, we are willing to start sacrificing our most profitable division so we can plow that money into other stuff that we think has long-term potential with lower risk.
Well, I think that just in general, like, listeners take away from this conversation really should be that the video game market is a healthy one, especially AAA, and that there's nothing to fear, and that...
You kind of feel there's got to be some kind of rebalancing at some point, but when that would happen, I don't know.
I will say that it's a little bit too simplistic to say Konami is risk averse, because ultimately they're saying we're going to step out of our most profitable division.
But I think they're projecting forward, aren't they? I mean, this is a trajectory that it's been on for a long time. And then you look at, you know, what's happening with mobile, and then you look at, you know, the future of the console business and all that. I think it's not just about, you know, it's not a static target. You know, you can't just keep reaping the returns they've already been reaping. You've got to look ahead and say, well, if we invest all this money to make a quote unquote AAA game that takes 3 years to make, where is the market 3 years from now?
Right.
They don't even know. You know, it's just those sorts of like radical uncertainties don't exist in those other divisions.
Yeah. So actually, here it is. They spent 106 billion yen. Their FY16 is they expect to spend 106 billion yen producing quote digital entertainment and only make 14 and a half out of it.
Wow.
Like that's such thin margins. That's crazy thin margin. That's 14% margin. Like that's rough.
For that risk, you know, that's the point. You know, if you're going to risk that much, you want a bigger margin on it. And I guess they're just not seeing it. So that's why you're making the switch.
Yeah. So I think that's going to do it this week. Like I said, we wanted to set out.
No, that's an upbeat.
I think the upbeat message is that they're doing some, they Nintendo are doing, and I don't like to say this way, a very similar thing in a very different way. They both diversified. And how they're doing, Nintendo is viewing their diversification as an add-on to their current platform. And we talked about this. All this stuff's being integrated. Whereas all of Konami's stuff is very diverse and very disconnected. You're not gonna leverage playing Castlevania into your health clubs.
They have done the crossovers with the patchy slot things. As
well,
we've
that's
made,
just because
you've
never seen patchy slot, go watch like video of somebody playing Yakuza 4 patchy slot with Sega characters. Your brain will melt.
It's the only way that Goemon's been kept alive, as far as I know. I think he's got a cameo in a patch. It's like so sad.
They did announce a Bomberman game for mobile, so it's not all lost. It's just mostly lost. So on that, I think that's going to do it this week. John, I want to thank you for being here. Where can people find more of you?
Oh, they can go over to Nintendo World Report TV, our YouTube channel, and I was playing every Star Fox game up until November 20th, and then the release date of Star Fox got moved, so now I'm stuck playing Star Fox.
To coincide with the release of Mario Tennis.
I'm just stuck playing Star Fox indefinitely until a Star Fox comes out. So, which ones, at this point.
So which ones have you worked through so far?
So the ones I'm done with, I've done a run through the original, I've done 64, and I've done Assault. I'm like 25 or 30% through Adventures, and I just started Command. It's a good time.
Oh, so you're just about to hit the part for Adventures where the budget went away.
Yeah.
Look forward to that.
Yeah, oh, here's the thing. I love all of them, so it's very optimistic. Okay. Let's Play series.
I hope you remember the Adventures. Actually, I hope you don't remember the end boss of Adventures, because it'll be funnier.
Oh, I do. I do. I don't think
I've been trying to get that.
I don't think you can understand what a giant Star Fox fanboy I am. So like I just close my eyes and smile the entire time. I have a good time.
Fair enough. Again, I want to thank you for being here this week. I watched the best of part for the command. Not command. Was it command?
Assault.
Yeah. Assault. Yes. That means
you don't have to sit through like 10 hours. You can just like enjoy all the funniest parts in one brief sitting of 10 minutes.
Yeah.
It's great. That's the best way to watch it.
That was good. I enjoyed that. That was nicely done.
Thank you.
We got any other, we do actually have other plugs. Emails. You could send your emails, I meant to do this at the start of the segment, to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. It's the same email every week. You can also send us your logo submissions. I don't have a definite timeline for when that's going to end. I don't know. When I feel like it. But again, it needs to be 1400 by 1400 pixels. If you send me a 14 by 14 pixel icon, I'm actually probably going to use it, because that would amuse me to no end. But iTunes won't be happy, and that's what we're trying to get solved here. So send that to us. We'd really appreciate it. You can also send us your music submissions for what music you want to hear ending the show. We went with a bit of a spooky...
Yeah, I combed the suggestion. We got plenty of good suggestions, but I combed it for spooky stuff. I didn't find anything that was quite a fit. But yeah, we'll be hitting the reader's suggestions, the listener's suggestions pretty hard, I think, in subsequent weeks.
So instead, we went with an entry from my favorite Castlevania game, Super Castlevania 4, which is weird because it's not the fourth Super Castlevania. It's Castlevania 4, aka Super Castlevania. Konami can't name crap. This is the theme of the Treasure Room, which is also stage 9.
Yep.
And on that, bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.